today on Pilgrim Radio's His People, Jamie Jangochian, on the path to sacred surrender.
I hope it's like a challenge and a call to believers, to the church, to really step up and check two things. Are we truly surrendered, or are we just going through the motions? Like, are we really living day to day for the Lord or for ourselves? And the second thing, are we waiting well? Because I don't know about you, waiting has never come naturally to me.
Jamie Jangochian next. On today's His People, we're joined by Jamie Jangochian, a Dove-nominated singer, songwriter, worship leader, and now author. Jamie has spent more than 25 years navigating the highs and lows of the music industry while facing the challenges of chronic illness and the long seasons of waiting that life often brings. Her new book, Sacred Surrender, invites readers into her personal journey of faith, healing, and discovering how to wait well with God. Drawing from her life, her music, and her heart, Jamie encourages us to embrace surrender and find hope in the in-between moments. Here's Sunny Kane.
Well, Jamie, first of all, I want to welcome you to our His People program. We're so glad to have you here today. And before we dive into your book, would you share a little bit about your journey early on, both in music and in faith, and how those first experiences shaped the path that you're on today?
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on your show, Sunny. And I can remember as a young girl, school was not my thing. I mean, I loved the people. I loved the extracurricular times. I loved music class. I came alive, but learning, not so much. And we discovered I had bad learning disabilities. And that's where piano then came into my life. As a young child, I started playing piano at like age 8 or 9. I was little. And it just was the first thing that came very naturally, and I loved it. I mean, it made me come alive. And there's statistics that show when the music side of your brain clicks on, that other side of your brain then can get ignited. And that was my story. I began to learn better. I think the self-confidence, the self-esteem grew. And music became my life. I mean, you talk about like musicals and talent shows and piano lessons and choirs and all of it. Faith-wise, that didn't happen until my junior year of college at Berklee College of Music. I was a jazz piano major, singing in the bars, cruise lines, my funny Valentine, all of that. And God got a hold of my life through Christian music. It was actually a tape because I'm old, and it had one song on it, Shout to the Lord. Do you remember that
one? Yeah, Darlene Check.
Yes, and I remembered hearing it and being like, this is what I'm supposed to do. Baby Christian, barely knew the Lord, knew one scripture, knew one song, Shout to the Lord. And God led me to Seattle to be part of an incredible church movement out there. And that's where I grew in my faith and discipleship of Jesus, and then as a worship leader. And then He saw fit for me to sign a record deal at age 25. And the rest is history.
Wow. And I think I remember reading that not only did you come to faith, but you led your family to the Lord. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah. So my mom flew out. I was getting water baptized in Seattle at this church because I had been like sprinkled as a child, but had never made Jesus Lord of my life and gone down in the waters of baptism and experienced that. So, I mean, I was like probably 22 now, and she knew it was important to me. So she flew out, and that same weekend that I was giving my heart to the Lord, I mean, going down in water baptism, she felt to give her heart to the Lord. There was an evangelist speaking at our church from Africa, and he was like on fire for the Lord. And she responded to his response, and I'm getting water baptized. It was just a beautiful moment.
How cool.
She led my dad to the Lord and my sister. And so, yeah, our family loves Jesus.
All through a tape. It started with the tape, Shout to the Lord. I love that, just seeing the legacy in your life from that.
Yeah, and through a classmate who had just come to faith who gave me that tape, which is so cool to like think about someone on fire for God, new Christian, leading someone else to the Lord.
And it's just that reminder, you know, we're here on a radio station. It's a reminder that sometimes the music itself can be an evangelistic tool. It can speak into the life of another person. And so for those of you who are listening, if you have a song that you love and that you feel like it could encourage somebody, go give it to them. Send them an MP3 or a YouTube video. You never know what could happen through that one thing. I mean, Jamie is living proof of this in her family. So, and how beautiful. And you've got a music ministry. You've got an album that came out in 2024, Sacred Surrender. And that's what we're here to talk about, is your book by the same name. So would love to hear, what inspired you to write Sacred Surrender?
Well, you know, that album came out of a really hard season. I walked through chronic Lyme disease and it nearly took me out. And when I got healthy and healed and on the other side of that, I signed a new deal and ended up making this album, Sacred Surrender. And so all these songs just felt like an expression of my life and what I had walked through and how to worship God in the waiting and how to release things to the Lord. And there's a song called Our Father on there, which is basically, not my will, Lord, your will be done. And I kept feeling in my heart, like, one day I'll have a book. One day I'll have a book. But never really had the confidence or didn't think that was me. I just... songwriter, singer, right? Worship leader. I'm not an author. So it really took the Lord kind of pushing me out of the boat, so to speak. And I ended up having a publisher, not the one that I went with, but a publisher contacted me out of the blue. Have you thought about writing a book? We'd love to offer you a publishing contract. And I literally said, I think you have the wrong person. I'm a singer. I'm a songwriter. Like, are you sure? And they were like, yeah, we've been following you. We love your heart. We love your message. And I thought, okay. So that led me to get a literary agent, a beautiful friend of mine who does this. And that began this journey of writing a book. And I was signed to a beautiful book publisher called David C. Cook, Esther Press. And this book just came out a couple weeks ago.
Now, you have already alluded to it, but I noticed as I was kind of flipping through your book, you've got a chapter titled When Hard Becomes Holy, and it includes your battle with Lyme disease. Now, how did that experience shape your understanding of surrendering to God's will?
Yeah, that was one of the hardest seasons, but what I learned is it became one of the holiest. And I love to encourage people with that when you're in the valley, life is filled with trials, but what happens in that moment, in the in-between, is so important. And I felt like it was a holy invitation from the Lord to really, one, grow in Him, two, to have to surrender everything. I mean, I went from working at a church, traveling, doing all these things, to selling my home in Nashville and moving back in with my parents. It was so humbling.
Yeah.
And during that hard season is where I think the Lord was like, you're not comfortable anymore. So let's really work on your character. Let's really work on who you are at the core. And I think as believers, we can just go on autopilot, or we can just work, or even in ministry. But really at the heart of it is we are a son and a daughter of God. And that's our title. And that is who we should be. And everything else should be an overflow of that. So in that season, I really learned the side of Jesus that very few talk about. He suffered for us. He walked through the most brutal suffering for our freedom, for our wholeness. And I felt like I was invited into a season of long suffering, which nobody wants. I mean, I don't wish that upon anyone, but God in His goodness and His kindness and His mercy, He will use everything for our good somehow. And that's what He did. He ended up working that season for my good. So if someone's listening and they're in a very hard season, my heart, I have compassion for you, but I want to encourage you to keep moving through it and to get everything that God has for you in it.
Yeah, it's funny, even the phrase invitation into suffering. If somebody sent us an invitation in the mail that says, I'd like to invite you to suffer, I think most of us would choose to decline, you yeah. know? So, but yet we can mentally clock with, like, yeah, God does invite us into those seasons of suffering. So for somebody who might be resisting their season of suffering, whether it is a health condition or something else, how would you invite them to actually, or what could they do to lean into that invitation?
Ooh, I resisted for a long time. I remember I was Google queen, Dr. Google, don't do that. It'll just send you down all the rabbit holes. It'll make you doubt, it'll make you fearful, all of it. But really, and this is where the book comes from, it was when I finally heard the Lord say, will you let go and surrender this? Surrender your health, surrender the outcome. We're not promised healing. Like, I'm so grateful I'm healed and on the other side of that. We are promised to be whole when we're in heaven, face to face with him. I don't know why some get healed this side of heaven and some don't. I don't, that's a mystery, right? That miracles are mysteries to us. But I can remember in the surrender, in that broken place of, okay, God, I'm giving you everything. I'm giving you the expectations that I even have on what's going to happen through this. When you truly lay things down and you just are, it's just you and him and okay, God, whatever you want. I think that's where the real living begins, because it's not about anything else but listening to him, obeying him, letting him love you back to life, things that we don't maybe do when our lives are full and busy.
When you were in your greatest, I guess I would say the greatest season of resistance with the surrender, describe the resistance for somebody who might not know they're there, but what does resistance look like?
Yeah. I think the enemy knows our weak areas, right? And he went right into discouragement, depression. This is how it's always going to be. You're stuck. I felt very, very stuck in that season. Nothing I seemed to do would shift it. And I think the lies that we can begin to believe is that this is the new normal. So I had to resist so many lies of the enemy that this is who you now are. This is your new normal. You're never going to get well. And I really had to daily renew my mind with, who does God say I am? What is God speaking over me? And the only way we can do that is knowing the word. Well, the headaches I had and the blurred vision I had was the ringing in the ears was so at a level 10. I honestly couldn't read my Bible. And so I'm grateful that I had had almost 15, I don't know, 18 years of being in the Bible. So I would recite scriptures that I would know. I would think on those scriptures. I would let my mind be filled with the ones that I could remember. And that was how I resisted the enemy. That was how I took a stand up in faith and said, oh no, I'm not listening to you. I'm listening to what God says. Did I get it right every day? No. Did I have pity parties at times? Yes. Did I fall into victimhood at times? Yes. But it was when I chose to come out of those ungodly beliefs and those lies and into the truth of what God said is where I really began to see the victory.
Yeah. I mean, how important do you think the thought life is when it comes to seasons where we need to lean into surrender?
I think it's everything. I think our thoughts determine our life, our world, our viewpoint. You know, the Bible is very clear. We can walk by the flesh or we can walk by the spirit. And it's hard to walk in the spirit if we're not renewing our minds. And if we don't know what the word of God says or who God is, like, it's hard to trust someone you don't know. So how are you going to trust this God if you don't know who he is and his character? You know, if you think he's a big, mean God and he's always frustrated with you, or he just, you know, is distant with you, well, then you're going to act that way. If you think of God as a loving heavenly father with arms outstretched, who's kind and generous, you're going to live and act in a way that reflects that. So I think it's key to really knowing who the Lord is. And we get to know him through his love letter to us, which is his written word.
And would you say, you know, those seasons when you're at the, when you're really at the bottom, when you're, you know, you described it in your book as when your hope is hijacked. How common do you think it is to actually have doubt in God himself? And for the listener who might find themselves there, how would you encourage them?
I think doubt is okay. I think it's a human emotion that God has given us. He gave us feelings for a reason. We get sad, we get happy, we have doubts, we have joy, right? We have all of it. But I think it's just that posture of bringing it to the Lord and saying, I'm doubting you, or I'm fearful in this area. I know you tell me, do not fear. So would you help me? Would you fill me with so much of your perfect love that casts out that fear so that that area of my life or that area of my belief system is no longer in doubt? And that takes work. I have some tools in the book of how we come out of agreement with things and into agreement with other things, how we lay down those ungodly beliefs, or you might call them lies, and how you come into agreement with the truth. I have a lot of practical kind of what I would call heart work kind of tips in there to help believers really get to the other side and break through, so that maybe those doubts, when they come, we know what to do with them a little quicker. But God's not afraid of it. And that's what I love. He wasn't disappointed in me in that season. I had to come out of that lie. I don't believe he put sickness on people. I think we live in a broken world with toxins and disease and all of that, right? So learning how to navigate that with him is where the real breakthrough came.
I love the permission that you're giving us, that doubt, because I think when we wrestle with doubt, we push it down. We're afraid that we have the doubt and we don't want to speak it out. So just the permission you gave us to bring that doubt to the Lord and work it through with him. That's a beautiful picture. And I think one that we often need to hear.
You know, I have a song out with Selah called Our Father, and the whole chorus is, God, I believe, oh, I believe, help my unbelief. And I think he just loves that posture of like, I'm standing in faith, Lord. Like, I am putting my whole everything into you, my faith. But would you help this area of my heart that still wrestles with unbelief? And just that, I don't know, it reminds me of King David, that posture of like, he was a mighty man of God, a worshiper, a man after God's own heart, yet he still had some issues and had some things he had to overcome, right? And I think we're going to always have that until we get on the other side, honestly. Yeah.
So you're not going to give us tips on how to get it all together before?
No,
that's not what this is about.
I don't have it all together.
Oh, goodness. Well, you know, writing a book that shares your personal trials and deepest seasons of waiting, it must have been challenging. What were some of the hardest moments for you in the writing process? And how did you navigate being so vulnerable with your personal trials?
It is a vulnerable book. I'm just reading it back again myself now, because, you know, after you write it, you kind of are like, I've had enough edits, all that. And I'm reading things back like, whoa, I put that personal story in there. What was I thinking? You know, like, now the world knows, or whoever picks it up knows. I think for me, it was a joy. I had prayed a specific prayer. Lord, if I get a book deal, would you arrange the contract and such enough that I can go on an eat, pray, love, write little tour? And as a touring artist, most of my work is on the road, but you don't have a lot of time to enjoy the places you're in. You're sound checking, you're setting up, you're getting ready for an event, you're singing. So he allowed that. And then I picked five different beautiful locations. My favorite was probably Banff, Canada. I went to Lake Louise and I had a day where I got to just see the water, sit there with my computer. It was lovely. So it felt almost like this sweet God adventure I was on. I felt like I was writing it with the Lord. I felt like things I was saying in the book, like book the solo trip if you're still single, like just do it. Like I felt like I was literally living some of the book in real time. The challenging part for me was getting all of my jumbled ideas in order. And I'm thankful for incredible editors. I kind of like vomited it all out. Words out. I have a lot of words, and then they kind of helped me put it into something that made more sense. But I have to be honest, it really was a joyful time for me writing this book. And maybe there'll be another one. I'd love to do a devotional one day or a Bible study one day. But it just felt like a God adventure, a new thing. I'm so used to writing music, recording music, singing. This was like a new thing my brain needed, you know?
Yeah. Well, and the devotional you're mentioning, honestly, for those of you listening, I want to encourage you to pick up her book, Sacred Surrender, because I can see how you could even make a Sacred Surrender devotional. I mean, there is such great content there. And you have some sticky statements, you know, even the hard to holy, the hope that's hijacked, that those quick thoughts in a daily moment to moment with God, I mean, you're already set up for it.
I wanted it to be a devotional, but your first book out has to, I guess, be more of a standard book like this. So maybe that devotional is coming.
Yeah, maybe it's coming. It's already there. So Jamie, how would someone in their own life, how would they know that it's time to surrender to God? What might be going on in their heart? What might be indicators that it's time to surrender? And for someone ready to take that step, how do they begin the journey of sacred surrender?
Well, I think first and foremost is the surrender to Jesus. If you haven't yet given your heart to him and become a Christian and become saved and a Christ follower, that is the ultimate step of surrender, is giving the Lord your life. Now, for believers listening, I think it then becomes a daily choice to surrender daily. I don't know about you, but when I first got saved, I remember these huge prayers like, I'll go anywhere. You want me to move to Africa? I'll go to Africa. You want me to clean toilets at a church forever? I'll clean toilets. Like, it was these big surrender kind of things. I'll do anything for you, Jesus, right? But then what happens 5, 10, 15, 20 years, listeners, maybe 50, 60 years into their walk, right? Do we still have that posture of, God, whatever you say, wherever you want me, if you want me to lay all this music stuff down, would I really do it? Is my heart that surrendered? So in Sacred Surrender, I teach a lot about the daily choice with God to say, not my will, your will be done. Lord, today, what do you want me to know? How do you want me to walk? What do you want me to lay down before you? Oh, you want me to stop dating that guy? Ooh, that hurts. I really like him. Oh, but you think there's someone better? It's that kind of thing. It's a daily choice. It's a daily, I hate this phrase because it's not comfortable, dying to my flesh and walking in the spirit, right? We want to be flesh led. We like what we like. We want it quick. We want it now, right? Who wants to be led by the fruits of the spirit, which is patience and long suffering and all these big things, right? So I think it's a daily choice to walk in the spirit, to have that posture of, Lord, whatever you ask, I'm going to do. I wish I got it right all the time. I don't. But I think the more you walk out this practice, the more you'll find your heart yielding that way. And then how do you wait well? Well, you wait well when you're surrendered. You wait well when it's not your timetable, when it's not what you want. When you truly trust that God's plan is better than yours, that's where the real living begins, because you're no longer trying to make it work on your own. I think waiting seasons are just preparation seasons. So in that posture of surrender, it can be one of your greatest seasons.
Sometimes we find ourselves in seasons of adversity where it feels like our hope has been hijacked, as you say. For someone who is listening who might be feeling that way today, how would you encourage them to guard their heart against despair? And do you have practical tips of how you have incorporated this into your own life?
Yes. And I think for so many, discouragement, disappointment, despair, can be tools of the enemy if we're not wise, right? We're normal. We have hearts. So of course we're going to get disappointed in life, and setbacks are going to happen, and things are going to happen, like grief and despair, all of that. But what do we do and how do we navigate it is what I like to talk about. And I think there's some real practical tips of how to daily live if you're in a place where you're really coming up against discouragement, despair, disappointment. One of the things I don't feel like in the church we talk about a lot, or maybe just circles I've been in, is taking care of ourselves. I actually used to think that was really selfish, to be self-focused. Yeah. And I know we are a selfie generation, so I don't want to make light of this, but I also think there's room and that God wants us to love ourselves well. Now, not like a weird self-love thing, but am I in a good place? And what do I need to do to stay in a good place? So practically, what do I need to do to make sure I am? Is that my daily sunset walks? Is that making sure I'm getting with some good community so that I don't isolate? Is that, of course, making sure I'm in the Word of God and in prayer? All of those things. But what helps you take care of yourself and navigate that with the Lord? You know, I remember one time when I was so sick and he was like, get up and get outside. And just being outside for those 10 minutes, it lifted my spirits from being in a dark room, a depressive room, a sick bed. So I think there's ways that we can, in despair, take care of ourselves. And that actually helps us to move through despair. So that's one little like practical tip. And a sunset walk might not be your thing. So find your thing. Maybe you're a workout girl or a, you know, I don't know, a Pilates girl. Find your thing that brings you kind of that life and that joy, even when you're in despair.
Also,
remember that seasons come and seasons go. And I had to keep reminding myself of that, that this isn't forever. Like this too shall pass. A season doesn't last forever. So I hope that that is helpful to somebody listening today.
Oh, goodness. I think that is. I mean, how often do we forget that it's, yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, not sitting in it, because we imagine I'm not just passing through. This is my destination. This is all there is for me.
Right.
And that is where that despair comes in. So what would you say your ultimate hope is for readers of Sacred Surrender? And how do you want this book to impact their spiritual lives?
Ooh, I first hope that this book is like a warm blanket of encouragement, because I think we need more encouragement in our lives. But secondly, I hope it's like a challenge and a call to believers, to the church, to really step up and check two things. Are we truly surrendered, or are we just going through the motions? Like, are we really living day to day for the Lord or for ourselves? And the second thing, are we waiting well? Because I don't know about you, waiting has never come naturally to me. So I hope this book encourages people waiting. Everyone's waiting on something, right? I hope it encourages people with the Lord to wait well in those seasons. And the tips, the practical tools, I hope all of that just really helps to encourage and bring wisdom and discernment in their lives and just kind of grow them to that next place.
Awesome. Well, friends, if you're walking through a season of waiting, I want to encourage you to check out Jamie's book, Sacred Surrender, and maybe listen to her album at the same time. They are both full of hope and encouragement. And Jamie, I just want to thank you so much for being here with us today on His People.
Thank you for having me. I've loved it.
You've been listening to His People on Pilgrim Radio. Many thanks to our guest, singer, songwriter, Jamie Jamgochian, author of Sacred Surrender. Coming up on tomorrow's program, it's Andy Bunn on Child Evangelism Fellowship's ministry to children of active military parents.
Children of military families, as do their moms and dads, face uncertainty. And that uncertainty is inherent to service in that there is constant moving around every 2 to 3 years. And so the children, who are quite resilient and learn to deal with this over time, they have to move to a new place, make new friends, get to know the area. That by itself is difficult. However, I was deployed one time, but even since the 90s, post 9/11 and the last 20 years or so, whereas a child's mom or dad may be with them on a Monday, on Tuesday, they could be anywhere in the world deployed.
That's tomorrow at the same time right here on His People. Thanks for listening.